Does our explanation distinguish between the three closing elements, the smiting and crossing of the river, the chariot, and the whirlwind? These are three elements that are distinguished in the picture. Does our explanation distinguish between them? First, we must identify the actors in our drama. Brother August has already very well identified one of them, Elijah, as the church. Elijah and Elisha have one thing in common. They are prophets of the Lord. A prophet is God's representative on the earth. There were many prophets. These were the leader of the school of the prophets, the head prophet, the main representative of God on the earth. We like to suggest that Elijah basically typifies the office of God's representative on the earth. That office is filled by the church. Therefore, we agree with the interpretation given. Elisha, his companion, we think is not a dual, but a single picture. But Elisha pictures the office of the successor of the church, filled first by the great company, later by the ancient words. But it's a consistent picture. It is an office. The sons of the prophets, they picture a class of non-consecrated believers who are influenced by the consecrated class upon the earth, the church, or the great company. Now, with this background, let's go to our interpretation of this picture of the smiting of Jordan. I would like to mention our interpretation is tentative, is given in the spirit of dialogue, and we'll be very welcome to share and hear experiences of the different. First, the picture applies to the harvest of the gospel age. Because in the picture, it says when he was about to be taken to heaven by the world. Therefore, it is a harvest picture. Next, we want to look at the three cities that he visits prior to coming to the Jordan. And we like the interpretation for these that is given in a rather early reprint article, reprint page 1132, 1132. The various stops made by Elijah represent trials, siftings, and separatings here. We prefer this ourselves to the more usual interpretation of dates given to these three saints. We feel they represent trials, siftings, and separations here. In the tabernacle, we have a basic rule laid down. Places represent conditions. In prophecy, we have another rule. Cities represent organizations, governments. Here we think these cities represent an organizational condition that provides a sifting, testing, or trial to the Elijah and Elisha classes. First one we come to is Gilgal. They did not go to Gilgal. The story finds them starting in Gilgal. They wake up in Gilgal when the story takes place. They don't go to there. Gilgal is where they are found at the beginning of the harvest. The word Gilgal means circle. It comes from the situation of a city that is located in a box canyon. So it has the additional meaning of entrapped, an organization in which people are trapped, Babylon. Gilgal is not the Gilgal in the plain near Jericho, because in verse 2 we find they go down from Gilgal to Bethel. Gilgal is a place higher in the mountains. The mountains here picturing the kingdoms of this world. So I think it pictures this organization of Babylon. In the book of Amos, Gilgal is the center of idol worship, which further concurs with this. Further, in Gilgal, you have no mention of any sons of the prophets. Not saying there weren't any there, but they're not in this picture. They are not mentioned. But Elijah says, I must leave. He recognizes that he must come out of Gilgal. Tells Elijah, do what you want. Elijah says, I will go with you. As my spirit lives, as thy soul lives, I will go where you go. So Elijah and Elisha leave this condition, and they go to another condition, another city called Bethel. In fact, historically, the next organization was named Bethel, the house of God. In Bethel, there were sons of the prophets. After a while, Elijah says, I must leave. But before this happens, Elijah has evidently imparted to the sons of the prophets the knowledge that this is the last part of his life, if not the last day of his life. And so the sons of the prophets, in their concern, approach Elisha and said, don't you know your master is going to be taken today? and feast. The concern over the completion of the church becomes a reality during this period, during this organizational experience. Historically, this has been very true. But after a while, the circumstances develop that Elijah says, I must leave. Come out of her mind. You can do what you want. Elisha leaves with him. They come to the next place, which is Jericho. And Jericho's got a nice meaning. It means the place of fragrance. A sweet aroma by the dedicated service to the Lord, and again, separated. And again, there is concern by the sons of the prophets over the fact that Elijah is going to be taken to heaven. And again, in this concern, the sons of the prophets tell the Elisha class, don't you know this? Yes, we know it. Just hold your peace. After a while, again, Elijah says, I have to get out. I have to leave. Do what you want. So again, there is a departure from this condition, from this place. This time, not only do Elisha go, but at least 50 of the sons of the prophets say something's going on. And we're going to follow, we're going to watch what's happening. And they trail behind to watch the next step. This time, there is no further crusade. This time, they come to the River Jordan, no organization. It is not a city. The sons of the prophets stand back. Elijah and Elisha come to the river. Elijah wraps together his mantle, and he strikes it, and they pass over. And now we want to look at this. This is our main subject given to us. This smiting. Why does Elijah smite the Jordan? The answer is so obvious. Why did the trick me cross the road? To get to the other side. I mean, this is the whole point. He smites the Jordan to get from where he is to where he wants to be. Why does he go from where he is to where he wants to be? Because the Spirit of the Lord is driving them. Where does he want to be? On the other side of the Jordan. What is the other side of the Jordan? The east side. So what? Okay. Well, let's look at our map a second. Elijah and Elisha are in this area. Elisha feels compelled to come into this area to be taken up into heaven. In the overall prophetic picture in the scriptures, there is a representation to these two sides of Jordan. If you recall, it was on this side of the Jordan that 2.5 tribes had their inheritance. The tribes of Reuben and of Gad. No, was it Gad? Yes, thank you. Yeah. Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh. On this side of the Jordan, the other 9.5 tribes had their inheritance. What does that picture? We feel that that pictures the difference between the earthly and the heavenly salvation. That these picture those classes. The great company, the church, and eventually the half tribe, eventually after the millennium, the ancient forces. That these are those who will eventually be of the heavenly class. This pictures the earthly salvation. But in Elijah and Elisha, we have pictures of heavenly classes. They must needs cross over to their reward. They must cross into this spiritual condition. They have been working as prophets, as representatives, among the earthly condition. But now they must pass into this spiritual side. Here's the catch. After they pass, Elijah still is not in heaven. He's not taken up. There is a period of time following the crossing in which they walk side by side before they're taken up. It obviously is a very short period. It does not compare with the period between Gilgal, Bethel, and Jericho. There you have whole trips and you have visits, you have conversations taking place and everything in the city. This is obviously a very short period, but there is a period of time following the crossing before Elijah is taken up. And yet, we stated that to cross means to go into the spiritual aspect of the kingdom. You know, what it really shows is that there is a difference between entering them symbolically or theoretically and entering heaven literally. As when he was caught up, actually. And isn't this true, in fact, of what happened in the completion of the church? There comes a period of time, sometime, When the church has arrived at a complete condition, this side of heaven. It's a short period of time. But there has to come a period of time when the church is complete yet on this side. Because it takes time to make one's calling election sure. Even the last one has to have time. So you arrive at this condition. We think it's pictured by the sealing of Revelation 7, 1 to 4, or the writing in the forehead of Revelation 14, 1 to 4. It's discussed at length in Volume 3 by Brother Russell under the picture of the door of opportunity to the high calling being closed, as distinct from the ending of the church itself. And we think this is what is represented by the crossing of the Jordan. The coming into this condition when these are part of the heavenly class, no doubt about it. But they have not yet ascended. They have crossed over into the spiritual aspect. It's a finished, firm picture, but he's not yet caught up. But here's the catch line. There's always one there. If this is true, and logic says it must be true, but Brother Russell stresses it so much, then there does come a short period of time when the statement will be virtually true, then in grace, always in grace. For that group here upon the earth, they will have made their calling election sure. It's a short period. We're a small number. It would seem almost axiomatic to say that for anyone to arrive at a condition where, like Paul, he can say, henceforth there is laid up for me this crown of righteousness. For anyone to come to that, he has to pass his final exams. For 99% of the church, that passing is in death. For this small group at the end, there has to be this testing by the Lord just prior to this closing experience. What is that test? That test, we think, is the barrier pictured by the Jordan. The Jordan is a barrier that he must needs cross over. It's that last thing which he must face before going into this fixed condition in the spiritual side of the kingdom. What is that test? We've noted prophetically that we anticipate a period of time in which, legally, the voice of the church would be silenced. Legally, it would not be permissible to buy or sell, save one had the mark of the beast. It would be a dark night which no man could legally participate in activity. But we think this provides that barrier, that test. The church, coming to this position, refusing to be silent, but in the spirit of the Lord, condemned, saying, we will proclaim the Lord's message. Pass this test to get into that fixed condition. That it thus represents faithfulness in owning the Lord. Faithfulness in witnessing to Him through this owning that He is our Lord and Master. Therefore, it does involve the giving of a message. But we think it's interesting to note that in the Scriptures, Elijah smiting the Jordan does not divide the Jordan. The Jordan is divided by something else. And we think this is implied when it says that when he smote it, the waters were divided hither and thither. And look at that hither and yon approach. There is, in connection with this whole scene, something we don't often look at. There are storm clouds overhead. This whole thing is a stormy day. This whole situation takes place during a stormy day. We feel it is the whirlwind that divides the Jordan. The smiting signals the division. You had the same thing when you had the crossing of the Red Sea. No way does a rod divide the Red Sea. It was a wind that divided the sea. The rod was the signal. When the Israelites entered into Israel the first time, into Canaan, the priest's toes touched the water and it divided. No way did their toes divide that water. It was a landslide out of it, up this river that dried the water. They're putting forth their toes just signal this. And so here, this smiting does not divide the Jordan. It signals the division of the Jordan. And we think it's the same picture we have in Jeremiah 25, verses 15 to 17, where Jeremiah is told to make the nations of the world drink of the cup of God's wrath. And where does he go? Into prison. But going into prison, he said, I made them drink it. By proclaiming that they would drink it, he was given credit. By the church proclaiming that this whirlwind effect would have this dividing, the church is given credit for dividing. And so, in effect, it reads as though the smiting divides. Because that is how God gives the credit. But in point of fact, it is the whirlwind that accomplishes this for the Lord. They cross the Jordan, and after they cross the Jordan, a chariot of fire divides them. The chariot is not mentioned as the conveyance by which Elijah is carried into heaven. The chariot is only mentioned as the device of division, as that which divides the two. The whirlwind is stated as the method of ascension. But why a chariot? Because a chariot, we think, is a conveyance, a method of transportation. And therefore, we think, although the whirlwind becomes the active element, the chariot is involved with the conveyance. In this connection, we'd like to know, reprint page 2341. The chariot of fire undoubtedly typified the chariot of glory, the changing from human to spirit conditions. But it may also signify more than this, as symbols of the trials and difficulties by which the Lord's people are prepared for glory. It has in it both thoughts, but its emphasis are the trials and persecutions that separate the Elijah and Elijah classes. Now, I'm interrupting sideline here. You notice what he sees is a chariot and horses. But what Elisha calls attention to is, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horse men thereof. He sees horses, but he talks about horse men. And we think that this may show a great company attitude, that what really divides is fiery troubles and organization pulled by doctrines. But what the great company is tempting to call attention to are the leaders, the personality, rather than the doctrine. That there's a temptation to look at personality rather than issue. The whirlwind removes, the church being removed in the early features of the anarchy trouble. Then the mantle falling, Elisha catching it up, and as a result receiving a double portion of the Spirit. A double portion, you recall under the law, was the firstborn's portion, enabling these to be part of the church of the firstborn, Hebrews 12:23, sealing the great company into their reward. Then Elijah goes back and he smites the Jordan, showing their death in faithfulness, also by the giving of a message, probably to natural Israel, as he applied in Song of Solomon, the 5th chapter, verses 8 to chapter 6, verse 2. And for those who want to research that further, reprint page 4728-4862. And there's some convention report comments also. Then when Elisha emerges from Jordan, he emerges in the same office as the successor to the church's work, but now the ancient orders, fulfilling this, coming up into the mediatorial aspects of the kingdom, coming back to the earthly salvation, to the earthly side. Now, does our interpretation answer our test questions? Does it answer the purpose of the narrative? Yes. The purpose of the narrative is to identify the closing experiences of Elijah, the church. Does it explain why he goes from Bethel to Jericho? We think yes. The purpose of going to these cities, and maybe this is the most important lesson in the whole chapter, the purpose of going to the cities was a responsibility to inform the sons of the prophets that he was about to be taken, implying a strong responsibility to the church class, to the non-consecrated, to inform them of the coming events that are about to happen. Third, does it explain why he smites the Jordan? Yes, to get to the other side. It becomes a barrier or test that he must pass, analogous to final exams in school. Does it explain what is accomplished by the smiting? Yes. To give the church credit for foreseeing and therefore for partaking in the parting of the peoples or waters accomplished by the whirlwind dividing the people. Fifth, does it explain why he has to go to these things? Yes, because these are part of the spiritual part of the kingdom. Sixth, is it consistent with other usages of Jordan and the crossing of a river? Yes, because it involves the crossing of a death sentence. When the church comes to that place of crossing into the fixed condition, they have effectually crossed over the death sentence. It also fits the Jordan from other places where Jordan is used as a full river, picturing mankind going from the heights of the Gibbon down to the depths of the Dead Sea, where Jordan pictures mankind, even as it pictures it here. Also the picture of a river, picturing people as in the four rivers going out of the Garden of Eden. Seventh, does it distinguish between the crossing, the chariot, and the whirlwind? I think yes. The crossing shows their faithfulness while on earth. The chariot shows their faithfulness in the final trial. The whirlwind shows the troubles that take them up. In closing, we'd like to suggest a parallel picture. We'll go into detail if you study this yourself. But notice in the Elijah picture, you have a drying of a river, paving the way for passage, followed by special trials that divide the group that passes and the completion of the church. Notice how this parallels the sixth plague of Revelation 16, 12 and 13, where you've got the drying up of a river, the river Euphrates, picturing people, to what? Quoting, to prepare the way for the kings of the east, to prepare the way for passage by the church, followed by a union of the beast, the dragon, and the false prophet persecuting and finishing the course to glory with a violent death. Very parallel picture. Scripture to leave you with Matthew 10:25. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more shall they call those of his household? If the Lord's method, if the method of finishing the Lord's life is a persecution of death, what more can be expected by those who are his followers?